Blog Talk Radio.
Here, conservative perspective on the Patriot Nation radio network, also heard weekly on the Red Nation Rising radio network, the Internet Conservative Radio Network, WSTR Digital Broadcasting, and through the occasional simulcast with those guys over there at News Without Filters. Don't think that's the case tonight, but you know what? You just have to be philosophical about this crap sometime, and that's what I'm going to do. So while I take a deep breath, I want you guys to listen to this. This is from a press conference held earlier today with a fellow by the name of Mark Kasowitz. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with this name, as was I till about an hour and a half ago, Mark Kasowitz is President Donald Trump's personal attorney. Having said that, this is an excerpt of what he said at a press conference today. As you know, James Comey, former director of the FBI, testified in the Oversight Committee today in Congress and turned out to be nothing but a big whiffer, as everyone thought it would be, the people who know about these things at least. Here's what Counselor Kasowitz had to say.
It is overwhelmingly clear that there have been and continue to be those in government who are actively attempting to undermine this administration with selective and illegal leaks of classified information and privileged communications. Mr. Comey has now admitted that he is one of these leakers. Today, Mr. Comey admitted that he unilaterally and surreptitiously made unauthorized disclosures to the press of privileged communications with the president. The leaks of this privileged information began no later than March 2017, when friends of Mr. Comey have stated that he disclosed to them the conversations that he had with the president during their January 27th, 2017 dinner and February.
Okay, and the reason I stopped it right there. In the course of his testimony today, James Comey did indeed admit that he had given this information to associates of his who in turn relayed it to the media. Now, today, in his testimony, in addition to admitting that he's apparently one of the leakers trying to sabotage the Trump administration. He said in his testimony that the reason behind what prompted him to do this was a tweet from the president. You remember that tapes tweet? Something like, uh-oh, Comey better hope we don't have tapes of this conversation or whatever. Well, that was what apparently prompted former Director Comey to release this. Now, we're going to continue. Well, no, we're not going to continue. We're going to play this whole thing again. But that part I wanted to get to you. Now, what they're talking about here, the bombshell comes about halfway through, but we're going to start this and run it one more time.
It is overwhelmingly clear that there have been and continue to be those in government who are actively attempting to undermine this administration with selective and illegal leaks of classified information and privileged communications. Mr. Comey has now admitted that he is one of these leakers. Today, Mr. Comey admitted that he unilaterally and surreptitiously made unauthorized disclosures to the press of privileged communications with the president. The leaks of this privileged information began no later than March 2017, when friends of Mr. Comey have stated that he disclosed to them the conversations that he had with the president during their January 27th, 2017 dinner and February 14th, 2017 White House meeting. Today, Mr. Comey admitted that he leaked to friends of his purported memos of those privileged communications, one of which he testified was classified. Mr. Comey also testified that immediately after he was terminated, he authorized his friends to leak the contents of those memos to the press in order to, in Mr. Comey's words, quote, prompt the appointment of a special counsel, close quote. Although Mr. Comey testified that he only leaked the memos in response to a tweet, the public record reveals that the New York Times was quoting from those memos the day before the referenced tweet, which belies Mr. Comey's excuse for this unauthorized disclosure of privileged information and appears to be entirely retaliatory. We will leave it to the appropriate authorities to determine whether these leaks should be investigated along with all the others that are being investigated. In sum, it is now established that the president was not being investigated for colluding with or attempting to obstruct any investigation. As the committee pointed out today, these important facts for the country to know are virtually the only facts that have not been leaked during the course of these events. As he said yesterday, the president feels completely vindicated and is eager to continue moving forward with his agenda, with the business of this country, and with this public cloud removed. Thank you.
Mark Kasowitz. Now, here's the thing. This whole issue is compounded, and here's why. Yes, he has admitted that he relayed this information concerning the details of this dinner, this private dinner that James Comey had with President of the United States, Donald Trump. If you go to Denise Simon's place, the Founders Code blog, just Google up Denise Simon, it'll take you right there. She released yesterday a copy of Director Comey's opening remarks, and I read it. And I looked at it, and I read it again. And I'm still here, Lisa. It's not dead air, honey. I'm here. And there wasn't anything there. And that's what, of course, we find out today in the testimony. But here's the thing. He gets fired because he's doing this prima donna thing. He's here, he's there. He has become seduced by the limelight and the cameras and all this stuff. And I'm not exactly sure who it was, but somebody, some wag, said that politics these days have become nothing more than show business for ugly people. And I suppose to a certain extent there is that. There's a lot of fawning in the news media, and you know, these guys are all the Sunday shows. They do this, they do that. They're all these different places. And I think, and this is just my own personal theory, and then we're going to go back to what I'm talking about, how he's compounded his problems should they decide to do it. No one has held sway or power or influence with and over the Federal Bureau of Investigation the way that J. Edgar Hoover did during his heyday. And in the early days, and I'm thinking the FBI was founded like around 1917. It had been around before that, and it was a failing government agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. But right at the beginning of the First World War, and in the years after the First World War, there was this thing called the Red Menace. And it was the coming awareness of the infiltration of communists in this fundamentally new doctrine, moving from Europe into the United States and trying to infiltrate government and bring about what we saw in Russia with the 1917 revolution. Well, J. Edgar Hoover capitalized on this, and he was pretty good at defending against communism. He knew a lot about it. He also knew a lot about everybody else in Washington, and that's why he stayed in power for so long. This whole spying, got stuff on you game, it's been going on. It's been going on for a long, long time. But here's the thing. James Comey wanted to be another J. Edgar Hoover. He saw himself as in a position to acquire that type of power. No president could get rid of J. Edgar Hoover. No congressional cabal, no group of senators, no gang of politicians arrayed against J. Edgar Hoover were going to prevail, because he had something on everybody. And they left him alone, and he remained in power for 50-some years. He didn't step down till 1972. So the only problem was James Comey's ambition and the ease with which he was seduced by the media spotlight outstripped his intelligence, his savvy. He was blinded. And he got caught with nothing. So he makes these notes concerning the conversation that he alleges took place with Donald Trump during this dinner back in January and at a subsequent meeting in February. Well, he gets fired. And he's mad because he got fired, because now he doesn't have that chance to be J. Edgar. He may have thought that he had Donald Trump cowed, but he didn't, and he got canned. So then he gives these notes, copies of these notes, to some of his associates. One in particular, a Columbia law professor, named Daniel Richmond. And Daniel Richmond was given these notes to leak the content of these things to the media. And the idea was that create a storm and outrage to the point that it would lead to the appointment of a special counsel to look into it. Well, it didn't work. The problem with Comey's story is this. He said that he gave him his friend to disseminate to the media based on this tweet from Donald Trump about the tapes. Now, here's the thing. That means, okay, Donald Trump tweets, Comey better hope we don't have tapes of this conversation or he's going to look like a jerk, which he does. And Comey sees the tweet and goes, well, that orange-haired son of a... You know what? Here. And he calls up his friend, Danny Rich. Danny, it's Jimmy. How you doing? I'm great. Look, you know those notes I gave you? Go ahead and send them out to the press. And let's see if we can't get enough stuff kicked up to where they got to appoint a special prosecutor on this guy. He fired me, man. All right? So they do. Problem is, these memoranda were quoted by the New York Times, an article that was published a day before the Donald Trump tweet. Do you see what we're talking about when it comes down to compounding now? So in addition to admitting that he is also, you know, that he is a leaker, he's also perjured himself. I'm going to go silent for a minute. Think about that while I take a drink. At least I swear I'm still here. It's not really dead air. He perjured himself in addition to admitting that he was leaking unauthorized information. Is that the same as classified? No, but it is serious in and of itself. That's one of the big takeaways here. Another one of the big takeaways, according to Alan Dershowitz, is the fact that during the testimony, basically, James Comey confirmed what everyone should know, that the president does indeed, under the Constitution, have the authority to direct the FBI to stop investigating any individual. The president can, in theory, stop investigating who to prosecute, who not prosecute. The president is the head of the unified branch of government and the Justice Department. And the FBI work under him. Oh, shut up, well. So the Justice Department and the FBI work under James Comey, and he can order them to do whatever he wants. Adams, Jefferson, Lincoln, one point or another, have directed the Justice Department with regard to ongoing investigations. History is clear. The precedents are clear. The constitutional structure is clear. And common sense is clear. But virtually every Democrat pundit, in their haste to get President Trump, has willfully ignored these realities. And in doing so, they endanger our civil liberties and our constitutional rights. Now that even former Director Comey has acknowledged that the Constitution would permit the president to direct the Justice Department and the FBI in this matter, we know this, let us put the issue of obstruction of justice behind us once and for all and focus on the political, moral, and other criminal aspects of President Trump's conduct. Comey's testimony was devastating with regard to President Trump's credibility, at least as Comey sees it. He was also critical of President Trump's failure to observe the recent tradition of FBI independence from presidential influence. These are issues worth discussing, but they've been distorted by the insistence of Democrat pundits that Trump must have committed a crime because they disagree with what he did politically. Director Comey's testimony was thoughtful, coherent, and balanced. He's obviously angry at the president, and his anger has influenced his assessment of the president and his actions. But even putting that aside, Comey has provided useful insights into the ongoing investigations. There's nothing there. There's no there there. The only thing that James Comey had in terms of this was some anger and resentment. They picked up all this. Now, here's what's going to happen. They're going to see this, and Comey has gone back and forth and back and forth, both of these sides. You know, the Republicans loved him because he was good-looking, and the Democrats thought it was slime. He comes out, he lists multiple-pointed documents of Hillary Clinton and the mishandling of classified information on her search and the whole deal. But then he says there was no criminal intent and takes upon himself the responsibility of the attorney general and exonerates her of any wrongdoing. They threw out immunities all over the place. So now he's a hero to the Democrats and the Republicans. He comes across additional information concerning the email investigations. 28 days out from the election, he makes this information known to the government, to Congress. It doesn't look good for Hillary. It never had looked good for Hillary. Hillary wanted to blame James Comey. We're going to get into a little bit of that later. Hillary wanted to blame James Comey, but Hillary Clinton was an unlikable and untrustworthy, a dislikable and untrustworthy candidate. But he comes some stuff that makes it look worse on her. But no criminal charges are going to be filed. No handcuffs underneath the overcoat. None of that. No perp walk to the old girl. Now the Democrats hate him again. Hillary Clinton loses the election. Donald Trump becomes president of the United States. And the Democrats really hate him. Donald Trump fires him because he was never really that good at his job to start out with. Unauthorized information through a go-between. He didn't even have the guts to do it himself. Like if a senator or if somebody did this, a senator would have to, identify who did it, expose who did it. So anyway, but he didn't do it himself. He sent this lackey, one of his boys, to do it. But he says the reason he does it was in response to a tweet from Donald Trump about the tape thing. But the New York Times was quoting information from this memoranda. There's only one place it could have come from, and that the New York Times was quoting from this thing in an article published a day before Donald Trump made that tweet. Is that not perjury? I think perjury. I'm pretty sure that's perjury. Down to the bottom of the hour, and like I said, all talking makes a fellow thirsty. So we're going to take a quick break, hopefully. Oh, yeah, today, incidentally, is there were some logistical hang-ups, and we'll probably get into that a little bit. With our buddy Scott Kesterson will be talking with us here at the other side of the musical break. And I'm excited about that because today is he's on the road. So we're going to get our first official report from Scott out there on the road because today marked the first day of Expedition Red, Trek 1, the America First Tour. So we're going to take a little break. I'm going to have a little music, and then we will be back on the other side, and hopefully our buddy Scott Kesterson will be with us. You are listening to A Conservative's Perspective right here on the Red Nation Rising Radio Network. Also, Thursday's live simulcast with the good folks over there at News Without Filters. We'll be back right after this.
Now I'm a fellow with a heart of gold, and the ways of a gentleman I've been told, the kind of a guy that wouldn't even harm a flea. But if me and a certain character met that guy that invented the cigarette, I'd murder that son of a gun in the first degree. Now, not cause I don't smoke myself, and I don't reckon they'll harm your health. I've smoked all my life and ain't dead yet. But nicotine slaves are all the same. At a petting party or a poker game, everything must stop while they smoke that cigarette. Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you've just got to have another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke. Puff, puff, puff.
In a game of chance the other night, old Dame Fortune was doing me right. The kings and queens just kept on coming round.
Coming around.
I played him hard and I played him high, but my bluff didn't work on a certain guy. He kept on raising and laying that money down.
Laying it down.
He'd raise me and I'd raise him. I sweated blood, got a sink or swim. He finally called and didn't raise the bet. I said, Ace is full, pal. How about you? He said, I'll tell you in a minute or two. Right now, I've got to have a cigarette.
He's got to smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death,
tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you've just got to have another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke.
The other night I had a date with the cutest little gal in 48 states, a hybrid uptown fancy little dame. She said she loved me and it seemed to me that things were about like they ought to be, so hand in hand we strolled down Lover's Lane. She was oh so far from a cake of ice, our smooching party was going nice, so help me hand, I think I'd been there yet.
I'd have been there yet.
But I give her a kiss and a little squeeze, and she said, Phil, excuse me please, but I've got to have another cigarette.
Another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you've just got to have another cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke.
Oh, St. Peter, I sure hate to keep you holding that gate open, but I just got to have another drag over this cigarette. Mmm, this pretty thing. Mmm. Thank you, Peter. Thank you.
Well, here's an invitation to a celebration tomorrow night at Lyceum Hall. Go get your glad rags pressed and wear your two-tone vest to the 8th Street Association barbecue and fancy dress ball. Boogie woogie thumping starts the joint a jumping, and all them cats is climbing the wall. The party really goes, cause things is really froze at the 8th Street Association barbecue and fancy dress ball. There the hoity-toity meets the hoi-polloity. This affair's real farm time. The function goes from 10 until they say amen. How they carry on. Grab your sweetest honey. If you lack the money, the building loan will welcome your call. It only costs an ace to grab yourself some space at the 8th Street Association barbecue and a fancy dress ball. When it's 12 o'clock, they have the grand parade. And when it's 1 a.m., the famous masquerade. And when it's 2 a.m., the festive board is spread with the punch bowl, the spare ribs, and the homemade bread. It's pushing 4 a.m., the festive board is clean. They start to count the votes to find a beauty queen. And when it's chiming 5, the folks resume their jive. They call a man. They call a man. They want the leader of that band. Grab your sweetest honey, and if you lack the money, that building loan will welcome you call.
It only costs an ace to grab yourself some space at the 8th Street Association Barbecue. And Fancy Dress Ball Amalgamated. Oh, Fancy Dress Ball Consolidated. That's Fancy Dress Ball Incorporated. The 8th Street Association Barbecue. And Fancy Dress B-A-L-L Ball. Some ball.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking. Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force.
Pushed the wrong button there. That, of course, from June 6th, 1944. 73 years ago, last Tuesday, which incidentally, D-Day took place on a Tuesday. That was Supreme Allied Commander General Dwight D. Eisenhower and his general order of the day for the Normandy invasion. 2,000 ships, 156,000 men. It was the greatest military operation of its time, and nothing yet has eclipsed it. And I'm hoping, it looks like, there he is, man. Okay, great. But speaking of expeditions, as you heard General Eisenhower talking about the expeditionary force, the leader of Expedition Red, just as promised, is here with us. I saw him sliding in on the switchboard just seconds ago. Ladies and gentlemen, our friend Scott Kesterson on the road somewhere out there. Scott, how you doing, man?
Hey, good, man. How are you, James?
I'm good. It's good to hear from you. Where you at? What's going on?
So I want to, if people go to our Instagram page, and I'm going to do this every week for you. So I just started it. So on the Instagram page at American Brand TV, you'll see two pictures of exactly where I'm sitting. Now I'm sitting in Bandon, Oregon, which is a gorgeous, probably one of the most beautiful places on the Oregon coast. And if you hear that noise in the background, that's the horn to warn the ships as they come in and to not hit the reef. So it's just, and the horn's about 50 meters from me. So it might get a little bit loud at some points. So cool. It's going well.
Why don't you, while you're there, you talked about it earlier, and I saw the way that you got your, vehicle rigged up. It looks like you've got it planned out. You were talking, I think in the morning coffee, about the cost of this journey for you.
The cost, you're saying?
Yeah.
On what level? I'm well, laughing because, you know, I think there's a lot of things about cost, and I mean, there's obviously the financial piece of it. So we'll
right.
start there, which is, you know, the financial cost of this is right now it's basically we've got a couple strategic, what I call strategic partners in this that have come forward and helped us out in different ways. One is, you know, the Minds.com is really big in helping us push out this message on that new platform. So
right.
I'm always going to pitch them, folks, because it is an American type social media platform with secure data and free speech. So get a Minds.com account. And then the other, we've had Ennis, Montana, Remax Mountain Realty has bought a drone for us, which I'll pick up when I get there. And it's a Mavic Pro drone, which is going to add a whole new dimension to storytelling. I'm super excited about it. And then there's
awesome.
MyCash, and, you know, I've had some other folks, just, you know, just small, some significant donors on the backside, but not, I shouldn't say significant. I mean, it's just small donors, and pretty much everything here is on a shoestring budget as I try to do this thing across country, and we're hoping to build up enough momentum to get people to donate and want to follow and be part of this, because it's more than, it's so much about us. You know, the Expedition Red is, I just talked to a guy that was a Hillary supporter, and it was very interesting conversation. He, I mean, when I got through talking about Expedition Red, he's like, dude, I am all about whatever I can do to help you. And he's, it's a great experience to have, because really with this, you know, just as, it, as you and I've talked, this is really about a whole swash of America, which is by the political map. If you listen to the blue, you would think that 95% of this country is racist, male misogynist, white, whatever else you want to say, and it's complete garbage. And the Expedition Red is not only to tell the stories, but to elevate those stories and just start really pushing forward with those values that are common to all of us. So in the sense of cost, there is an enormous amount of cost from my other businesses, two of which I've shut down and had to step away from, because to do this is 100% of the game. I mean, there is a, you know, tremendous financial cost for me, tremendous personal risk cost to me, but I don't think there's another game in town to do right now, to be very honest with you, James.
Well, I guess when you talk to people, just like when you talk to this Hillary Clinton supporter, and obviously, you know, they listen to you and they, you know, what you had to say resonated with them. And this is something I've been thinking about, and I'm not really exactly sure how to phrase the question, but it would seem to me that you will be fundamentally traveling through friendly territory, should we say.
That's a correct statement.
Well, no, but you know what I'm getting at here. And, I mean, you see what these Antifa people are doing. I mean, there was a college professor that clocked some kid with a padlock wrapped up in a tube sock.
Right.
And I'm just looking at this from like a personal safety standpoint. And what's your perspective on that part of it?
Well, I was interesting you said that. My mom was, when I left, very emotional, and not just because I spent about a month at their house preparing this whole process and getting my stuff ready, but she made a comment that was very interesting. She said, you know, I saw you go off to Afghanistan, but this is distinctly different. And I would agree with that to begin with. I mean, I'm not being any fool when I talk about what it is to be on point on a project like this. When, you know, you're running pretty much as a solo out here, you've got to constantly watch your flanks and keep an eye on your six, and you've got to be always alert because you don't really know what you're going to run into. And I've taken the bold step to logo that car. I mean, it doesn't say Trump, but it says America First, Expedition Red, and then it gives the website. So if there's any doubt where I sit, it's not going to take long. But I'm also like this. There's kind of two sides to it. If we aren't going to be bold and stand up, then don't get in the game. And I've accepted that for a long time. You know, when I went out there to tell this, originally went to Afghanistan to tell the soldier's story, I was kicking the teeth in of media folks that were claiming they were doing it when they weren't. I think people need to understand too. I mean, what I experienced there was pretty crazy. I mean, one particular phase when I released those videos from the Canadian soldiers in combat, Very few people can tell you what I'm going to tell you, what it's like to become the singular main focus for an entire nation that wants to destroy you, and that was Canada. I mean, Canada, the government of Canada, the media of Canada declared war on me because I broke the narrative of truth. I broke through their bullshit and laid the narrative of truth down and said, your troops aren't police peacekeepers. They're engaging combat fighters, and they're doing a lethal and great job over there. And literally, I had, you know, Toronto Sun was writing disparaging articles, just making shit up about me. And then you had the Canadian Parliament was debating my name on the floor, declaring that I may be a risk to national security to permanently revoke my passport and access entry to, not my passport, but my entry ability into the country. I mean, it was serious. And it was something that it was a big deal then, and now I look at this and going, okay, so maybe we're going to do it again. And I really don't care, because this country is that important to me, and making sure that when we look at this red state and I'm seeing this circle jerk of media that's going on out here and how they want to portray 90 to 95% of this country by geographic space, there is nothing more valuable than to bring truth and honesty to the table and to start elevating the stories and the true value sets that drive this country at whatever risk that is, whether it's financial or personal or whatever.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is why I dig radio. There you go. Now, you just caught some feeling off this dude. This is somebody who believes in what he's doing, and you see it in this is an idea. This is the most original idea that I've heard of in a long, long time, what you're going to do. And like Yoda says, do or do not, there is no try. And you're going to do this, and I know you are. And
well, there's no stopping it, you know.
And I think it's going to create, like I said, it's going to create tremendous momentum. And you sound like you're ready psychologically. I'm pretty sure you got to be ready physically, you know. So
a little bit of both, you know. And it's last night was I'm filming this because I'm hoping I can cut together at least a documentary short, and which I can. I'll put together a documentary short when this is all over. But you know, I'm trying to capture some of my thoughts, and there's not just on the YouTube and the Facebook and all the other things we're doing, but also just on the other filming that I'm doing on the side to capture where this is. And last night was what I call my transition into the zone. Last night it was you've left the safety of living in a house. You're now embracing that for the next 6, 8, 10 months you're going to be living in out of your car, you know. And it's not as because I'm homeless, but because that's the only way to do this. You don't do this thing by hotels. If you do it by hotels, you never get into the culture. If you do this by camping and roughing it and once in a while maybe crashing at somebody's house, but you're in with people, you're in with nature, you're in with what effectively to me is the core element of Red State, because we live in the world. We don't live in the digital realm. And to do that story means you have to push yourself and strip away the safety mechanisms that we surround ourselves with and put yourself out on point. And that last night was my transition point to the headspace of where I am now, and it's only going to get better. And I will assure you, folks, if you think this story has got to start, just follow it for the next few months and see where it goes, because it's going to be wild, it's going to be fun, it's going to be crazy sometimes, and it's going to be honest and true, and it's going to show this world out here that Red State is so rich and so complex that it's really what makes America's engine work, not this blue stupidness that we've got going on.
And then there's no shortage of it. I'm sure you probably, you haven't, because you've been on the move, Comey testified today, and it was just it was just exactly a couple of things happened that are interesting, though. He kind of got caught in that he admitted that he had leaked information, unauthorized information concerning the dinner that he had and a subsequent meeting in February. But he said the reason that he leaked it, what prompted him to leak this information through an intermediary, was a tweet that Donald Trump had made saying, Well, Comey better hope we don't have any tapes of that conversation. The only problem was the New York Times was quoting from Comey's memoranda in an article published a day before Donald Trump made his tweet. So I think that he's compounded this, and it sounds a little bit like perjury going on here, too.
Well, so Comey is a new is a middle player. And when I say that, one of the best headlines I saw today was Comey gives both parties red meat. That's
right.
Comey.
I saw that too.
He's trying to play and to save his ass. He's trying to put both ends to the middle. We've had so much of this, and you know when you really look at Comey, it is the exact reason he was fired is what you saw today. This duplicitous garbage that should never be that way in the FBI. We need somebody who's clear, focused, knows the law. I mean, this idea that he was concerned or I was fearful of or I perceived, those are all sentiment. Sentiment is emotion, and there is no law that works on sentiment. Our classification system doesn't work on sentiment like this crazy woman chick – whatever, I'm just forgetting her name. It's a funny name. Too.
Reality
a winner.
I know who you're talking about.
Reality winner. You can't make that up. Our flower child, right? Flower child. Because I felt what her latest garbage from her parents. She felt she would be disappeared. Really? I mean, what type of crazy crap is this? You felt that you didn't like Donald Trump because your candidate wasn't winning. And instead of blaming the real culprit, which was Hillary Clinton, you decided to dump classified information out to the world and put America at risk. Let's get this real. This isn't about emotions, folks, and this is the problem with the left is everything about them is driven off of what responds on like a Twitter feed. I mean, somebody says something and everybody reacts. I'm sitting here right now. You know, exactly. I'm sitting here right now, and I've got the ocean on both sides of me as I sit on this levee out here. And it's real. I jump into that water, I'm either going to live or I'm going to die. There's no in between, right? And those waves are either going to take me or I'm going to be able to overcome it and get back on shore. If I get emotional, I get mad at the waves and I go jump in and I'm going to get exactly what I deserve and I'll probably drown. So here it's solid. And what I find is that when we go across red state, and this is just beginning, but my whole feeling toward this is proving true. When you live around environments where you're really building things, you're really making things, you're having legitimate work where you touch and feel the product of your labor, not this imaginary BS that we go out here because I made a new special app today to figure out how to track your eye movement when you're sneezing or something like this, right? I mean, who cares?
Right.
What is important is what's here. And Red State as a value base has this. It values what work and labor produce as a tangible outcome of your efforts. We can see it and touch it and feel it. When we get out into blue state, they've built a world around if I feel that I'm being threatened, I sense that I'm being threatened by a word, oh my goodness, I'm going to lose my frickin' mind. And we've created an entire spineless and dysfunctional generation that quite frankly may be good for the ruling elite, but it's completely tearing our country apart thanks to our liberal crazies in the university and our education system, our politicians, lawyers, and our tech elite.
They want a class of consumers.
Oh, they want
They want a class of consumers. They don't want anybody to produce. They want it provided for them.
Yep.
That's the whole government. That's the whole government shtick, man, is, hey, you know, vote for me because I am going to plug you in, dude. I'm going to give you the hookup. They want to generate consumers of government largesse, consumers of Amazon's even getting in on the act. Scott, have you heard about this? They're offering a 45% discount for Amazon Prime memberships to people who are on government assistance.
Yeah, I saw that. It's just this constant looking for money. And here's the worst part. Amazon basically backdoored taking money for EBT cards is what they did, okay? Because the biggest – I don't know if people realize, but your biggest lobby to keep welfare in place and not change it are your convenience stores. The convenience store lobby is the one that drives the EBT card funding, okay? Because once – it should be illegal. Convenience stores are the biggest ripoff in the world for people to be buying their daily bread. So so to speak. But that's where they have offset their losses by accepting welfare cards. And it is, that means taxpayer dollars are going to fund an industry. This is Elon Musk's model, you know? I mean, it's getting to be insidious. And the big, big lobbies, the big industries keep looking for new ways to make profit and money. And where they keep zeroing in on is, well, let's keep digging into the taxpayer pocket. How about not? How about if we go back to you need to work for a living, right?
It's going to reach a point of critical mass. There's going to be this point where the pop-off valve is gonna be initiated.
And I think we're closer than people realize.
I do too. And you see it like, and you mentioned, oh my God, the college and university system in this country. Don't even get me. And I say this coming from family who, you know, that's how they made their living, was teaching at a small community college here in West Virginia. And it put food on the table and clothes on my back. But what is going on is it's no longer free thought. It is acceptable thought. They're not taught how to think. They're taught what to think.
Well, we're not creating a generation of critical thinkers. We're creating a generation of Orwellian type obedience. The Expedition Red, there's another layer. I mean, there's a lot of layers to this Expedition Red concept. I mean, we talk about kind of the top layer, but when we dig in a little bit more, and it's something what you just said that I just want to hit on, we are getting to a point where the pressure valve may pop. I don't know that there's a stopping it. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but the problem is right now that the left is pushing as hard as it can because it's frantic, knowing that it's starting to disintegrate. So when people get cornered like a crazy animal, they do crazy things. The problem is right now across red state, what President Trump woke up is not, doesn't have a cohesive threat. There's values out there that are very common, but there's also a lot of divisiveness within red, not realizing that the things that we're different on are the things we should be different on, because that gets down to states' rights. That gets down to the melting pot and things like that. Part of the goal I have is, if there's one singular goal, and this is a guy asked me today, he says, what's your objective? This is the Hillary Clinton supporter. And I said, my objective is just to weave the thread of the common values and the common base in which we all can commonly agree on through red state. And it's not as complicated as people think. It's just that there needs to be an awareness elevated. Because if the left continues to do what it's doing, it is going to try to provoke, as it is now, but it's going to accelerate provoking random acts of violence from the right, out of getting the right cornered and forcing that action. That gives them justification to point the finger and say that the right are racist, the right are alt-right, all these crazy things. What the right has to be, and I'll use red state, because I prefer that rather than right, but the red state has to get solid on is what we are together as a solid, connected unit across this country. We have temperance, we have patience, we have faith, we have a lot of those great things. We have to improve our humility and our integrity, to be honest. But when we get into those solid areas and then we start to look at those common threads that make us, we can respect our differences and use those respect for differences to build unity to make a solid force that stands against, like an inflexible, unbreakable wall to the left's garbage. And that is what will, to me, no matter what happens, it's what saves this country. Otherwise, I do get concerned, because we'll end up in tribalism, factionalism, and warlordism. And right now, that's the tipping point we want to avoid.
Jerry Brown enters into a treaty with China.
Yeah. He violates the Logan Act.
Exactly. Well, and no state. Right.
Should
so
be
what
arrested.
Happens
I mean,
here? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Why isn't he being perp-walked?
Well, I have a theory on this, and I it's a bold theory, and I'm just – I don't want to – it treads into conspiracy, so I'm going to be careful. But an observation – let me put it this way, rather than saying a theory – when you start to look at how things are lining up and how President Trump has done his action, he has truly come about this, I think, from trying to look at the country of generating jobs and just generating healing. But in doing so, I also think that he's realized, like any CEO that takes over a company and it's going to do a reorganization, that there's going to be some outliers. You can't simply make directive action against those people until they step in it themselves and make it a justifiable recourse that you, your decision you make. Jerry Brown,
right.
I'd let him go. Where I'm at, I'd say Jerry Brown needs to go. Let it go to China, make that treaty, and then watch what happens. Because if they do it right, DOJ steps in and he becomes arrested. They can send in the marshals and put him in cuffs and drag his ass out of California and let California melt down. Because it doesn't matter. He needs to send a message ultimately to every governor out there, every mayor out there, that if you violate the Logan Act, you're going to prison, period. That's the way it is. This is a country.
And
this isn't the individual state.
Yeah, it is a union. And there was a big discussion about that 150 years ago. And we are the product of that. Before the Civil War, it was the United States are. When they talked. And now it is the United States is. We moved from a plural to a singular. And there's no question about that. And it may be that, you know, this is what he did with Comey when he dismissed Comey. It was, you know, it was abundant that he had to go from anybody in the administration. He had more than enough justification. And I tend to agree with you. But there's going to have to be some resolve in bringing some of these guys to heel. They're just going to have to be.
I agree. And I'm tending to believe that with this Comey testimony, now already the Democrats are trying to tread towards, you know, obstruction of justice, which is typical play. I mean, everybody needs to keep in mind that the louder the Democrats squeal, the more successful Trump has played. The louder that the Republican elite squeal, the more successful Trump is being. The louder the left squeals, the more successful Trump is being, period. You know, and that's just a constant theme, that every time he touches one of their nerves, like he burns their church of environmental ecoism down with his removal of us from the Paris Accord, then now they're going out of their mind. Well, good, because that, you know, they knew, they should have known better. There isn't a discussion about, we can all agree collectively that there's climate change going on. We can't agree collectively, nor can we ever agree collectively that there, what the source is, when you start telling us that there's a singular solution to this and all discussions are forbidden. That is dictatorial thinking, and that is what exactly they've been using, and that's why they're so pissed off, is because they had this game sold, they thought, but it wasn't, and that's the continued actions Trump needs to take.
And I think that he will, because this is what I, this is another version of what I call political science. Anytime that these, you know, it's not a baby, it's just a lump of cells. Okay, great. What kind of cells? Are they squirrel cells? Are they lamb cells? No, they're human cells, because what's going to happen is this is going to become a person. But it's political science, because they want to try and pass this off as scientific fact when it's political stuff.
It is political, and we see that with how it was funded. We see that with who else is involved with the funding. I mean, I had a long talk with a journalist today about this, who is an environmentalist, but, you know, it doesn't matter to me, that it isn't an issue to me of the discussion of climate change. There is I don't care if it's until the end of their days, if we prove that it was, let's say it ends up being completely man's cause and effect. But in that discussion, you had 50 scientists that were claiming that it was solar activity that was causing it. And in the end of the day, let's just say in this example that they were wrong. It doesn't matter. What was important is that the discussion was open without restrictions to look at all possibilities to come up with the best course of action for who we are and being truthful and honest about it, not using it for political mechanisms to find ways to use public funding to build a privately held company, Elon Musk, use public funding to try to rip out the energy industry, the natural resource energy industry, so that we would become dependent on tech-based energy. I mean, these are the games that are going on. And using U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund third world shitholes out here that are polluting, or helping build a carbon commodity market that is going to benefit Al Gore, Jerry Brown, the Clinton Foundation, George Soros. I mean, the list goes on. right? I mean, these are the real mechanisms behind this whole climate initiative, but we don't even know what the truth is right now.
Global gangsters. And I can tell you it's not us. I really, truly believe, just as an aside, man is not – it's not anthropogenic in its source. I think the sun has been burning hotter lately. When I was a kid in the 70s, all the talk was about the coming ice age.
Well, as then, I said to –
But, you know, I mean, that was the coming, you know, that was the thinking was we're going to go into another mini ice age. And within the span of 15 or 20 years, we moved from this mini ice age into the greenhouse effect and a hole in the ozone and all these different things. And they've never been right. In other words, they are never right. The science is never conclusive. It's never settled because we just can't get that big a picture of it.
Well, and I think that's the bottom line is. The truth of the answer is unknown, all right? And the origins, each one of us may disagree on what the actual cause and effect is, at least right now. But we're going to disagree a lot more when you start telling a whole bunch of people that you're crazy, you can't talk about it, you're going to be arrested, you're going to be punished, you're going to be taxed because you say a different perspective. We're going to rip your grants away. That's what this neurological craziness has done. And, I mean, that on its premise itself, forget everything else. I will reject everything about climate, about the environmental movement by that simple premise alone, that if you truly believe what you say, you're going to stand up and withstand the criticism and challenges by debate and be able to listen and debate back calmly, professionally, for the benefit of what you say is so important. The minute you start to become dictatorial, you're nothing more than just a political puppet.
And the evidence is overwhelming and has been for the last 5 to 6 years. They've ponied up the records. You're exactly right. If you want this grant, this is what your research needs to lean towards in terms of our perspective on this. And that's what we want. We want you to produce research that's going to bear out our narrative. And if you can't do that, I don't think we're going to be able to do business.
No, I agree. I mean, how do you stand on something when you know? All right, let's just say, for example, I go back. Is I like to use devil's advocate type thinking because it kind of extreme thinking. So we'll say that we'll take the premise that man is the cause of all things. I don't buy it, but anyway, we'll say it for the sake of this argument. And then you find out that but you guys keep changing your data, you keep modifying your data, and your predictions keep being wrong. So where's the integrity and where's the legitimacy in that basis? How can you make that argument anymore, right? It's just
exactly.
Fundamentally that simple.
There's nothing concrete about their theory, but that's how they try to sell it. So let me ask you this, man. Let's move on a little bit into the journey. What's going to be happening over the next couple of days from where you're at?
So the trip I redid a little bit. I mean, I'm still the first leg is still roughly the Lewis and Clark Trail, as is the second leg. But it's the principle more of what Lewis and Clark represented at the time that I'm kind of re-energizing back into this in a modern way. And that is that rather than just retracing the trail, I'm really going out. I'm doing a huge big swash in Oregon through all the red counties. Heading up, and I'll eventually hit the head of the Lewis and Clark Trail sometime. I think it's next week or something like that. And then I'm heading over, and I'm also going through some couple sites that are important to my personal story, which brings in the story of the values of Red State America. So, for example, I'm going down to Carson City in the next day or two, and I'm going to go where it's just where my grandfather on my mom's side panned for gold, and then I'm going to eventually end up going to Flora, Oregon, which is a tiny little what's left of it, way up in the northeastern part, which is where my great-grandfather on my dad's side homesteaded. And so there's some parts here to tell these stories to get both personal and real as I navigate through loosely the Lewis and Clark expedition, but most importantly to look at what this terrain, this country, the people, what we live like out here and what that challenge is. And part of that challenge is, you know, every day I'm camping, finding places, intentionally just kind of you know, some of it's not rough camping, like meaning I'll go to campsites. Some of it is rough camping,
right,
more on the beach like it was last night. But it's this mix of stuff, and it's keeping myself in the outdoors, in the environment the whole time, which is, again, part of that value piece towards Lewis and Clark. And so it's going to be I'll be down the Oregon coast to Carson City this week, and then I'm moving through next week. I'll be heading up through Cave Junction, over to Grants Pass, Medford. These are all nice, good red cities. And heading over to Klamath Falls, I'll end up in Crater Lake, do a little bit of that. Over to the Oregon Observatory, it's over near Bend, and then I'll cut back up, back across the Cascade, or through Cascades, and then over into the coastal range, back on the Oregon coast in about 10 days, and then head up to the peak of Oregon, and then cut across down that, which is really the Lewis and Clark piece, down the Columbia River, all the way out to eastern Oregon, and then weave myself through eastern Oregon and into Idaho, and then end up in Ennis, Montana, for the first leg on July 3rd, roughly.
Excellent. This is, I still, it's for me, I got to be honest with you, there are times when I look at the enormity of this thing that you're doing. And no, seriously, this is going to be a huge, huge story. I sat last night and I put the map up on the big screen. You know, all the different tracks that you've got lined up. And I'm just sitting there and I'm looking at it and I'm going, man, he is covering, I mean, this is a big country, as we've talked about, and you're covering so much of it in what you're doing, and it's just, this is going to be something, this is going to be something historic, man. I really do think so. And I hope so.
I really do.
You know, I think that what's going to happen, we're going to be astonished at that just beneath the veneer, that commonality, that solidity that we all have. And I think what you're doing, and we all know it's there, but we need this reminder. We need this. We need these pointers, these images and examples to make sure, because we've been divided for a long, long time over a lot of different things, economics, race, gender, orientation, all these different things, which the left is so good at, and that's identity politics, that we need to get back to that touchstone of those common things that we all fundamentally believe. Don't hurt anybody.
I agree with you.
You know, I agree with you.
And these are big issues, and I totally agree with you, because I mean, obviously the dimension of the story that we're going to be headed to is, and it's just starting. So, but I mean, we've got months to get this in place. But the dimension of the story is to get to where I'm able to start meeting with the business owners and the people, and we talk about perspectives and values and put them on film, not just talk. I mean, I'm talking now, but there's a ramp up always in a project like this, but
right,
try to get
sure,
people to get people comfortable and talking about how they feel. And that's a big part of this, is I'm sharing these stories that I'm seeing and witnessing, but I'm still finding how much of this whole base that voted for President Trump, this is cautious to even come out. And, you know, my comment is that days for caution are over. You voted in the guy, get out there. Get out, be willing to talk, be willing to stay, say who you want. And, you know, that's why, you know, you said at the very beginning, you know, there is a measure of risk. But if I don't lead this thing by saying, hey, look at my car with these big letters, Expedition Red on it, and, you know, America First Tour, and, you know, here's my website, what's the point of doing this? I'm not going out here trying to hide and sneak around. I know what
right.
I'm doing. I know what I'm here for. And I'm hoping that in itself is enough of it begins to be a statement of we all need to do this, because it's time. We've got to get back to those old values of when you see that kid and he's smarting off to some girl and he's or smacks her. You don't sit there and go on the side and go, oh, the damn youth. No, you go up and you tell him, you go, you know what? You're going to knock this crap off or I'm going to rip your goddamn ear off. Because
yeah.
you don't treat people that way. You don't act that way. You start growing up, and we start to mature ourselves through this process to accept that we have a responsibility to the nation, not just to our family, but to the nation. which is for our family and for the future generations to speak out. And it doesn't mean going holding signs, picket signs at downtown Portland and throwing Molotov cocktails. It means just saying enough is enough. That starts with one-on-one. This is where I stand. This is what I believe. This is who I am. You're not changing me. I'm happy to listen to you. But ultimately, if you can't embrace that we are one nation, that we are a nation with borders, with rules, with laws, you don't belong here, period.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to our buddy Scott Kesterson, who has got his pilot light lit. And he is stoked up. He is ready to go. And this has been this has been 30 minutes of some awesome radio. I know that you're going to be talking with Mark here in just a little bit, so I'm gonna cut you loose, man, and let you catch your breath for a minute before you have to call. And we're already 10 minutes after. He's having a little trouble logging on, so we were stretching it out a little bit. I look forward to every Thursday at the bottom of the hour of this program because I know we're going to get into some good stuff, and I know that we'll be talking about things that are happening all over the world in addition to what's going on your trip. We're going to get your take on those things. Ladies and gentlemen, our friend Scott Kesterson. Scott, Godspeed. You take good care of yourself, and you be safe, and we'll be talking to you on next Thursday, okay?
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you very much, as always, for having me on. Folks, check us out, theamericanbrand.org, also Facebook at The American Brand. And then we're now on YouTube with The American Brand and on Instagram, American Brand TV. Thanks. Have a great day. Look forward to talking to you next week. It's always a pleasure.
All right, Scott. Take care, buddy. We'll see you then.
Okay. Out for now.
All right. Okay. Our buddy Scott Kesterson. We are we're waiting. Mark's having some technical difficulties. I don't know, Gage, is what we got going on here. We're waiting on Mark. Mark Hoffman, of course, you know, the guy that has the second show, Patriot Nation Radio Live, he was there and now he's gone. And we don't know where he's gone to, but we know that he's going to be, he can't get in. How about that? Well, you know, sometimes in the radio business, technical issues come up, and I don't know if I've ever told you guys this story, but it appears that I'm going to. We've plenty of time. Mark can't hear yet. So here's what's happening. This is how I got into the radio business. A long time ago, probably when I was in college. So, yes, a long, long, long time ago, in the summer of 1982, I worked for about 6 months as a weekend jock at an AM top 40 station. And in those days, on the weekend, the overnight was Larry King. Larry King used to have a radio show a long, long time ago. And so, you know, it was like 11 to 6 a.m., 11 p.m., 6 a.m., hanging around. But that last hour after Larry King signed off, he signed off at 5 o'clock. And then from 5 o'clock to 6 a.m., hey, guess what? It was my own personal record party because, you know, nobody was listening. It was a great, and that was the time of WKRP in Cincinnati, and I was just a regular Johnny Fever, and I thought I was somebody. And then petered out. I went on and did other things, but I'd always had a love for radio, as most of you know. Well, we'll fast forward to about 2007, 2008, something like that. And the pastor at the church I was going to won this radio station in a poker game. And I knew the girl who was programming director. And I went up to her one Sunday after church. And I said, Tana, if you ever need somebody to, like, read your public service stuff, your copy, what, you know, whatever you got going on, let me know. I would be glad to do that. Your PS, your public service announcements and stuff. And, well, it went from that almost immediately, because I think I recorded the first public service announcement. It went from that to, well, we don't want you to do that. What we would rather have you do is a week program from 5 to midnight, Monday through Friday. Well, it was all on computer. It was all pre-recorded, just kind of like I do the program for the Red Nation Rising Network and its affiliates. And so it wasn't that hard to do. And you could do 8 hours of radio, 7 hours of radio in about an hour and a half, and that was with the commercials, and you had a computer screen that showed you the songs were coming up, and you just get like the last 3 or 4 seconds of a song, and you'd go, well, that was Casting Crowns, with their latest hit. You're listening to WRLB, Contemporary Christian Heart Healthy Radio, and man, I can still remember that. And so I was a doctor. Sold to a fellow who owned a number of radio stations in that area. And the deal was, because my pastor loved me, I think, the deal was that, you know, you got the radio station, you got to take the announcer. And so they took me, and I wound up being a board jockey. Doing sports. I was the sports anchor for the Greenbrier West Cavalier basketball and football team, and we, you know, the guys would go out to do the shows, and a lot of times we would set it up through a landline, through the telephone, and it's not that difficult to do, but other times we couldn't do that. We'd have to go with a cell phone. And it was a cheap Walmart cell phone, and the coverage wasn't so good, and the plan they had wasn't that hot. They had to buy in minutes, you know. This was a shoestring operation. Everything was tight. But they got it done, and I can remember more than one occasion we would go through the opener. I would hit the button for the opener. Now, stay tuned for Greenbrier West Cavalier basketball. They would go through this thing, and it's out. Now, here's Mike. And I would flip the switch. I'd bring the speaker up, and there was nothing. There would be no sound. I'm like, oh my God, man, what? Are you kidding me? Okay, let's. And then I would go ahead and put the computerized part of the system back on. I would run some stuff. We're experiencing technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get Mike and the guys with you here in just a minute. And I would play a song or do some commercials, do some spots or something. And I would call them, or they would call back, and we'd try and reestablish it. And it's just, that's radio. That's radio. High or low. You know, the mighty, the low, doesn't matter. That stuff happens all the time. And you can't get too excited about it. And Mark is still not going on here. We don't know where Mark is. He's trying desperately to get in. So what we're going to do, I'm going to be back in a second. I may have to be here for a while, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a little bit of music, and when I come back, we'll see what's going on with Mark. You're listening. Well, right now, sitting in for Mark Hoffman until he gets here, I'm Jay Bostic. This is Patriot Nation Radio Live. We'll be back right after this.
When Madame Pompadour was on a ballroom floor, said all the gentlemen, obviously, the madam has the cutest personality. And think of all the books about Du Barry's looks. What was it made of? A toast to Paris. She had a well-developed personality.
Why did Romeo see in Juliet, or Pierrot in Pierrette, or Jupiter in Juno?
You know. And when Salome danced and had the boys entranced, no doubt it must have been easy to see that she knew how to use her personality.
Unless she's got a perfect personality. A
girl can get somewhere in spite of stringy hair or even just a bit bored at the knee. If she can show a faultless personality.
Why are certain girls offered certain things, like sable coats and wedding rings, by men who wear their spats right?
That's right. So don't you say I'm smart and have the kindest heart. Oh, what a wonderful sister I'd be.
Just tell me how you like my
personality.
Baby, you've got the cutest
personality.
This is the G.I. Jive, Man Alive. It starts with the bugler blowing reveille over your bed when you arrive. Jack, that's the G.I. Jive. Rootle-de-toot, jump in your suit, make a salute. Voot! After you wash and dress, more or less, you go get your breakfast in a beautiful little cafe they call the Mess. Jack, when you convalesce, out of your seat, into the street, make with the feet. Reach! If you're a PVT, your duty is to salute the L-I-E-U-T. But if you brush the L-I-E-U-T, the M-P makes you K-P on the Q-T. This is the G.I. Jive, Man Alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called Fluid Drive. Jack, after you revive, chunk all your junk back in the trunk, fall on your bunk, clunk. Private tank that features a little device called a fluid drive. Jack, if you still survive, chunk all your junk back in the trunk, fall on your bunk, clunk. Soon you're counting jeeps, but before you count to five,
okay, well, after talking it over with our producer, Miss Lisa, we've decided I'm going to go ahead and make an executive decision that she's given me permission to make. We're going to go ahead and cut things off. Mark can't get in. He's already live on Facebook. So all you good listeners over there at News Without Filters, thank you first and foremost for joining us, even though it's the end of the program and actually 25 minutes after my show has been off. But thank you for being here with us. If you want to catch up what's going on with Mark, and he's talking with Bruce Nathan, gubernatorial candidate of the state of Florida. He's also going to be talking with Christian Saucier's wife, Sadie, what's going on with Christian Saucier, and you don't want to miss any of that. Mark's had his finger on the pulse of that story for a long time. It has been awesome. We look forward to seeing you next Thursday here on the simulcast live version of Conservative Perspective. We do that in conjunction with the good people over at News Without Filters. I'm James Bostic. Thanks so much for being with us. We will see you next week when we will be taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective.